34. Thank you so much for your support.
Today, it's looking like a mix of clouds and sun with highs near 33, west wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, a chance of flurries, lows 22 to 29 with a south wind gusting up to 20. Tuesday, tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs 41 to 46 with a blustery northwest wind and overnight no lows near 29. Wednesday, it's looking like we're going to have sunny skies with highs in the low 40s, breezy northwest wind.
Did you get snow flurries over the weekend? We did in Grand Rapids. We got enough to kind of coat the ground a little, just a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit of a dusting.
Yeah, let us know what you had at your place. Text 218-326-1234. Ahead, we'll have more from National Public Radio's Morning Edition. And at 8:45, a bright spot, we're going to learn more about United Way of 1000 Lakes and volunteer opportunities available there. Thanks so much for tuning in to KAXE and KBXE this morning. More news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. A group of Democratic and an independent senator have helped Republicans pass a stopgap spending bill. It's aimed at ending the federal government shutdown. The legislation is supposed to assure a vote on higher premiums that Americans will pay next year for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. NPR's Luke Garrett says the senators explained their change of heart.
When asked why now, after blocking government funding for 40 days, Maine Senator Angus King said waiting just wasn't working. Bottom line, these Democrats said they believed the shutdown was hurting the country too much, and they got real concessions, you know, from Republicans. But they're betting big that enough Republicans will cross the aisle in December to pass an extension on health care tax credits. That's definitely not a certainty.
NPR's Luke Garrett reporting. The Federal Aviation Administration is temporarily grounding all MD-11 aircraft. It's in response to last week's deadly crash of a UPS cargo plane in Kentucky. The mayor of Louisville says 14 people were killed in the accident. NPR's Chandelise Duster reports the grounding of the cargo planes will have a ripple effect on shipping.
FedEx and UPS grounding their MD-11 aircraft could have an impact on holiday deliveries, aviation experts say. The MD-11 aircraft are a small part of UPS and FedEx fleets, but carry thousands of packages each. Mike Stengel of Aerodynamic Advisory says delivery impacts could depend on how long the aircraft are grounded.
If it only lasts a few days, then we shouldn't see much of an impact on, you know, holiday, you know, package deliveries and things like that.
UPS and FedEx say contingency plans are in place to minimize disruption in deliveries. Aviation experts say holiday shoppers should plan to ship packages early to ensure gifts arrive on time. Chandelise Duster, NPR News.
Hamas has handed over the body of an Israeli soldier held in Gaza since 2014. This may indicate progress toward phase two of a U.S. brokered ceasefire between Israel and the militant group. President Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, is in Israel for talks today. NPR's Lauren Freyer has more.
Phase one was halting violence, exchanging bodies, and boosting humanitarian aid to Gaza. Phase two is disarming Hamas, deploying international troops, and governing post-war. Hamas's handover of the remains of Hadar Goldin, an Israeli soldier killed in a previous Gaza war, could impact phase two negotiations over some 200 Hamas fighters. They're believed to be holed up in Rafah in southern Gaza. Israel's been demanding they surrender or be killed. The U.S. floated the idea of freeing them if they agree to disarm and in exchange for Goldin's body. As for an international security force, Turkey has been involved in talks, but an Israeli government spokesperson says there will be no Turkish boots on the ground. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
You're listening to NPR News. President Trump has pardoned 77 people involved with efforts to undermine the 2020 election results. The White House says President Trump, quote, is putting an end to the Biden regime's communist tactics once and for all. Trump has continued to falsely claim he won the 2020 presidential election. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth says the U.S. military has attacked two boats in the Eastern Pacific. Writing online, he says six people were killed. He alleges they were engaged in drug trafficking. No evidence has been offered. The city of Jackson, Mississippi, began hosting the 82nd National Folk Festival this weekend. It's the country's oldest celebration of traditional arts. Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Shamira Muhammad has more.
The National Folk Festival has been featured in nearly 30 communities around the country, but it's the first time the festival is being hosted in the Deep South. Mississippi Delta Blues musician and artist James Johnson goes by the name Super Chicken. He makes guitars from items such as electric fans and cigar boxes, as well as an instrument called the diddly bow.
Diddly bow is one of the Delta's first blues instruments, derived from an African instrument called the kora.
Artists performed bluegrass, West African balafon, salsa, Irish music, and DC go-go. Jackson will continue to host the festival through 2027. For NPR News, I'm Shamira Mohammed in Jackson, Mississippi.
On Wall Street in pre-market trading, stock futures are higher. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
It's 8:06. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
Good morning. Stage North Theater presents 10 November, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, tonight at 7 at the Franklin Arts Center in Brainerd. You can find tickets at stagenorththeater.com.
We also receive support from Brainstorm Bakery, headquarters of Crapola, with four flavors of granola handcrafted at the bakery on East Sheridan Street in Ely. Online ordering available and more at brainstormbakery.com.
The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is looking for people to collect tree seeds and cones this fall and winter. Current high-demand species include jack pine, black spruce, and red pine. You can visit mndnr.gov/seedcone for more information.
Support for KAXE comes from Minnesota Power, an elite company envisioning a carbon-free future through their Energy Forward strategy. More at mmpower.com/energyforward. There is more ahead from National Public Radio's Morning Edition here on KAXE.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Leila Faldin. Good morning. A group of Senate Democrats have defected to agree to a deal with Republicans to end the government shutdown.
In a few moments, we will speak with one of the Democratic senators who voted to reopen the government. This measure received 60 votes in the Senate last evening, exactly enough. John Thune, the Republican leader, is looking to work through Senate procedures in days to come.
I am optimistic that after almost 6 weeks of the shutdown, we'll finally be able to end it.
Most Democrats still voted no, saying the agreement gives them no assurance on their central demand, which was extending subsidies for health insurance.
NPR congressional correspondent Claudia Grisales has been following this and joins us now. Good morning, Claudia.
Good morning, Leila.
Okay, so for weeks we've seen fits and starts of talks, blame games, both sides dug in. Now this group of rank-and-file Senate Democrats is breaking with leadership to move this deal forward. What's actually in the agreement?
Well, the package includes a stopgap measure to fund the government through the end of January. It also includes full-year appropriations funding plans for some federal agencies and services. It will pause planned cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, mm-hmm. also known as SNAP. It also reverses federal worker layoffs installed by the Trump administration during the shutdown and protects the workforce from more cuts for a few months to the end of January. Democrats who defected also got a promise of a vote on health care. As you remember, the party has fought a Republican stopgap measure to reopen the government to address expiring Affordable Care Act subsidies that spiking premiums, but they didn't quite get there.
Okay, but that was the main demand, right? I mean, how did this group of Democrats get to yes if they didn't get their top demand to protect Affordable Care Act credits?
Right. They've been separately negotiating with Republicans for some time now. And they said that they could not get this deal from Republicans. They were pretty adamant. So the impacts and the chaos growing for federal agencies or workers, and then we saw flight delays and cancellations across the country. This also created new pressures for Democrats, these who defected. And the group also argued that growing numbers of people were being hurt, and the plan includes a long list of wins for their party. So in the end, 7 Democrats and 1 independent joined Republicans to get this plan across this key procedural hurdle.
But they broke with leadership, right? And most Democrats voted no. And what did the rest of the party say then about what they did?
Well, some were pretty furious. This defection came after an hours-long meeting for Senate Democrats. And Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, who voted no, he argued that regardless of the outcome, Democrats have put a spotlight on health care.
We are going to fight legislatively, fight back home, fight in the courts, and bring this fight in the elections.
You could also say there's a political calculus here with Schumer and other leaders voting against this deal. They're hoping they're insulated from blowback from their party, but that remains to be seen. After Democrats left that meeting last night, I heard the angriest response from Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren. She said this was a terrible mistake. And when she was asked if Schumer did a good job leading the caucus on this, she said, "I think the American people want us to stand and fight for health care. Obviously, that is not happening." So this was always going to be an ugly ending. Democrats could come out of this pretty bruised, but some would argue Republicans will not be left unscathed either.
So what happens next? When can travelers expect to see their flights resume and people's food benefits to be paid in full?
Well, the Senate still has a few more hurdles before final passage, but if that happens, the House will take it up in the coming days, and we could see those flights and food benefits get back to business in the coming week or so.
That's NPR Congressional Correspondent Claudia Grisanis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada was among 8 Democrats and independents who voted in favor of the deal to end the shutdown. She had, in fact, voted to open the government sooner. Senator, good morning.
Good morning.
What, if anything, did Democrats gain from the past 6 weeks of the government shutdown?
Well, let me just say a couple of things. One, and as you pointed out, I was one that have voted that we shouldn't have shut it down. But let me just say this. I can honestly say that the Democrats are united in this fight, which is a fight against the bad policies of this administration and to address the looming healthcare crisis that we have. You know, Jackie and I are fighting for Nevadans, and we have different tactics about doing it, but this is a fight to ensure that people have access to healthcare and can afford it. We are seeing people in our states, premiums are increasing already. And so there are many people that rely on this healthcare. I know families that need this healthcare because of children with rare diseases. And so it is important that we continue this fight. Mm-hmm. And let me just say this. Democrats are united that we need to get this done because we are seeing this in our states and all states across this country, including in Republican states. And if Republicans choose not to come to the table to address this issue, then they own the disastrous premium increases that this will bring. And they have to be responsible to their constituents why they are not addressing the affordability issue that is an issue in this state for many families and individuals.
You mentioned Jackie. Of course, you mean Jackie Rosen, your fellow Nevada senator who had been voting differently on this. It sounds like, though, based on your votes, you did feel that the Democrats picked the wrong tactic, the wrong fight.
No, listen, I'm not going to criticize my colleagues because we are all in this fight against the bad policies of this administration. Everybody's going to have a way of fighting in their states and showing that fight, and we have to. It's what this administration is doing with the tariffs and a failure to lack of address the affordability issue in this country is important. I see it in my state all the time. And this administration said on day one that they were going to address the cost and have done nothing. And I've got small businesses closing. I've got people that can't afford groceries at the grocery store or clothes for their kids when they get ready to go to school. And now we have a healthcare crisis that we could address simply by coming to the table and passing these subsidies, but the Republicans and this administration refuse to do so. And let me just be very clear. But let me just be very clear, because these are the policies of this administration. They would rather harm people. They would rather make sure that people can't access SNAP programs, and essential funding and food just to harm individuals to prove a point and play politics. That's not where the Democrats are here.
I want to acknowledge that in this battle, you've had an opportunity to raise these issues. It's created a lot of political conflict and a lot of news stories, and there's been a lot of discussions. So you did get that out of this. However, elsewhere in the program today, we spoke with Congressman Richie Torres of New York. He's in the House of Representatives. He is not at all in favor of this agreement. And I said, well, we're going to hear from Senator Cortez Masto, who's voting for it. What question would you have for her? And here's what he said.
I would ask, why does the deal fail to extend the tax credits for 24 million Americans? I mean, that was the whole objective that Democrats were pursuing. By that standard, it's not mission accomplished. It's mission failure.
Is he right?
It goes back to this idea of where we think our tactics can be as still fighting for Americans. Let me counter that with this. Governor Spangberger just won, governor-elect in Virginia.
Right.
And she won on the issue of affordability. And she said the government needs to be open. And she focused on the affordability issue, not because the government was shut down. So we can still, this is a misnomer, and I just have to say this so many times. We can have the government open, fight for people to make sure that our kids are not dragged into losing access to SNAP, essential SNAP funds and meals, or seniors lose their meals. We can make sure they have those and still fight on the affordability issue. And by the way, this is on the Republicans. We've got to vote in December.
Right.
To decide whether or not they're going to be with us to address this issue on the premium tax credit. Now they're going to own it. They can step up to the plate and help us address this issue for Americans across the country who are losing access to health care, or they can be a part of the problem.
You've been talking with Republicans. Do you think that any of them might vote with you in December?
We're going to find out. Let me say, we're going to find out. We will find out. Part of the agreement that we entered into, and you heard it, was Leader Thune said he would come to the table on a health care once the government was open. And now he's got to follow through. He gave us a December date. And now they've got to follow through. And the American public will see where, at the end of the day, Republicans lie. Do they really care about this issue, or do they want to cause more affordability issues for Americans across the country?
I want to ask about the side issues that are part of this agreement. There are some appropriations bills that go through. There's a provision that furloughed workers will be paid, which under the law they already should have been paid. Fired workers will be rehired. Mass firings will not continue. These are the agreements. But it now goes to the administration, which has taken the view that any restriction on the president's power to fire people is unconstitutional, and that they will ignore it. That has been their position in the past. Given that, is that part of the agreement worthless?
Well, that's like saying, Steve, then, because, and I agree with you, this administration is lawless and they ignore everything. But then that's like saying, then we shouldn't just do anything. Then we shouldn't do our jobs here. We shouldn't appropriate. We shouldn't come together to demand certain things in the appropriations bills, or demand from our Republican colleagues any type of guarantee from them that they will stand united with us because the administration is not going to be there. Then we might as well just shut down and give them everything. So this is part of holding Congress's role here and our Republicans accountable. They've said that they're going to stand with us on these issues and fight for federal workers. And now they're we'll see if they stand true to that. They've got to be a part of the solution and be a backstop to this administration.
You think that the Republicans who are voting with you here will not only agree to these measures, but actually try to do something if the administration ignores them?
I am telling you that what the Republicans have agreed to is just what you talked about, the RIFs and the reductions in force, and to protect that workforce. If they go back on their word in this agreement, then the American public will know where the Republicans, who are control in Congress, where they stand. Do they really care about Americans at the end of the day and addressing the affordability issue and making sure people have jobs?
Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada, it's a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
Have a good morning. This is NPR News.
It's 8:19. Thanks for listening to Morning Edition here on People Powered KAXE, KBXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
Good morning. We received support from North Homes Children and Family Services, providing mental health care in Minnesota. November is National Adoption Awareness Month, highlighting the need for adoptive and foster care families. North Homes provides licensing and case management for those opening their hearts and home. More information is available at northhomes.org.
We also thank the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, dedicated to conserving the rich ecological landscape of Minnesota, offering memberships, educational camps, and habitat projects. More information at mndeerhunters.com.
We appreciate support from ICTV as well. Stay tuned, stay connected with ICTV. You can learn more at watchictv.org.
Let's take a look at our current temperatures. We are at 26 in Aiken, 23 in Hibbing, 25 in Grand Rapids, 26 in Brainerd. For today, a mix of clouds and sun, I think kind of depending on where you are, if you're going to see clouds or sun. Highs near 33, winds from the west 5 to 10. Chance of flurries tonight with lows 22 to 29 and winds from the south gusting up to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, a bit warmer, highs 41 to 46. However, we'll have blustery northwest wind and lows tomorrow night near 29. And looking ahead to Wednesday, sunny with highs in the low 40s. Once again, breezy northwest wind.
Our question of the week, you can tell us about your home economics and shop class projects. You can text us at 218-326-1234 with those stories.
Coming up at 8:45, we have a bright spot. We're going to learn more about United Way of 1,000 Lakes, and they have many volunteer opportunities that people can take part in. Also, certain programs going on right now. We'll learn more about that. And then at 9 o'clock, Andrew DeZingle is your host for Headwaters. Monday means Request Line Day. Andrew's theme today is songs about food. You can text in your suggestions on that. 218-326-1234, and he'll put together a set of music at 10:30. Right now, we're going to hear some new music. Langhorn Slim. Always excited to see new music from that group. This one's called Rock and Roll.
Sometimes, but we're gonna get high.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Stephen Skeep.
And I'm Leila Favaldi. Good morning. The head of the BBC and the chief executive of BBC News have resigned. It comes after criticisms that a BBC documentary edited a speech by President Trump and misled viewers. It's led to a crisis at Britain's national broadcaster and one of the world's biggest news organizations, which relies nearly half a billion people around the world every work, which reaches them, excuse me. NPR's Fatima El-Kassab has been following the story and joins us from London. Good morning.
Morning, Leila.
Fatima, how much of a crisis is this for the BBC and how did this come about?
So, Leila, this is really pretty seismic. Mm-hmm. It's very unprecedented to have two top bosses at the BBC resign in one night. This really came as a surprise last night. But it comes after days of mounting pressure and damaging headlines about the BBC. This all started with a newspaper report in the Telegraph newspaper, which suggested that a BBC documentary that aired a week before last year's presidential election had edited two parts of a speech by President Trump so that he appeared to explicitly encourage the Capitol Hill riots. The clip spliced together two separate parts of President Trump's January the 6th speech, which were originally more than 50 minutes apart. Now, the BBC says that no complaints were received about the editing of this speech in the documentary at the time, but these claims published last week reignited this latest crisis. And they come from a memo published by The Telegraph from a former external advisor to the BBC, who also accused the corporation of serious and systemic bias in its coverage of a whole range of issues, so not just President Trump, but Gaza and trans rights.
Now, the BBC is UK's national public broadcaster, and it's not new to scrutiny. So what's changed?
That's right. I mean, just this summer, for example, the BBC was criticised for not cutting away from its live stream of Glastonbury Music Festival. That's when one act, the punk duo Bob Villain, began leading chants against the Israeli military. Now, that's just one of the controversies. And it illustrates that whatever the issue is, whether it's Israel or Israel-Gaza or other issues, there are people on both sides of the political spectrum who aren't happy with the BBC. Mm. Now, the BBC has always come under pressure from all sides, but recently some of that criticism has just gotten louder, especially right-wing criticism. In his resignation statement, the BBC's Director General Tim Davie acknowledged that mistakes had been made, but he said that in what he called polarizing times, the BBC should be championed and not weaponized.
What has the reaction been to these resignations?
So President Trump welcomed the news overnight. He wrote on Truth Social, he said, thank you to The Telegraph for exposing these corrupt journalists. He also said BBC journalists tried to step on the scales of a presidential election. Now, political reaction here in the UK has been varied. You've got politicians on the right who'd been calling for heads to roll over this. They welcomed the news, but others are really concerned about press freedom. This is what Member of Parliament Ed Davey had to say. He's the leader of Britain's third biggest party, the Liberal Democrats, and he said that people on the right of British politics were following in the footsteps of Trump's America and endangering free press.
We are deeply worried that we're seeing populism, right-wing populism, damaging our institutions like the BBC.
Some senior staff at the BBC say they feel this is part of a political attack against the organisation. It's a major crisis, but for now the organisation has its two top jobs to fill, and then there's the question of rebuilding trust in the BBC, which will take longer.
That's NPR's Fatima El-Kassab in London. Thank you, Fatima.
Thanks, Leila.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm Stephen Skeep.
I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Monday morning show here on People Powered KAXE. It is 8:29.
We receive support from Hot Tubs of Northern Minnesota on Middle School Avenue in Bemidji, offering hot tubs, pool tables, saunas, and more. Learn more online at hottubsmn.com.
And we thank Lakes Tax Advisors, where Ron Berg and his staff offer tax, accounting, and payroll services for Minnesota businesses, with locations in Grand Rapids and Rush City. More information at lakes.tax. Coming up in just a moment, we'll have a special edition of the Up North Report. We're going to meet our first North Star student. You can also find more on that story and an excellent photo by our volunteer photographer, Lori Schall, at kaxe.org. And before 9 o'clock, we're going to meet Molly and Kim from United Way of 1000 Lakes. We're going to highlight all the volunteer opportunities they have and other programs that are currently going on as part of our Bright Spot segment. Right now, it's time for the Up North Report.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with a special edition of the Up North Report. We're introducing a new series, North Star Students. We want to highlight Northern Minnesota students who deserve to be recognized, whether that's for their athletic accomplishments, artistic endeavors, academic achievements, or other efforts. Here's what you can expect. With each North Star student, we'll have an interview with them on the KAXE Morning Show. There will also be a feature story and photos on our website, kaxe.org. Our first ever North Star student is Bemidji senior Abby Damon. She was nominated by her swim coaches, Lisa Freet and Danielle Bartz. They say Damon is really stepping up as a leader this year, volunteers many hours, and is a strong, silent example of what hard work can look like. Here's an excerpt of our interview with Damon and Bartz, starting with why she was nominated.
Just wonderful human being. She's a hard worker. She's positive. She's encouraging, good athlete or good student athlete. And so I think she's kind of got a good holistic picture of, or like working towards, you know, the academic and the athlete part, and being a good role model for everybody. She's inspiring to me every day. So that she'd be a perfect candidate.
Do you have any favorite Abby memories?
Oh man, I don't know if I can think of anything on the spot. She's just a joy to work with every day. She's always working hard, which is awesome to see. And just smiley. And yeah, I'm trying to think of like a fun story, but
Fargo.
West. Every single one. So we have a West Fargo invite every year. And I think even this year, she was sick. Every year she's been sick. The first year I was with the team, we ended up having to pull over because she was barfing on the bus. but she's still like, she was a trooper about it. And yeah, so this year she got to compete again, which was exciting. But yeah, still got sick. She's consistent. We like to talk about that quite a bit, I guess.
Abby, I wanted to ask you, what achievement in swimming are you most proud of?
I think I'm really proud that I've always kind of kept like a positive mindset about things. Like sometimes after a bad race, I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was just awful. But I've never like tore myself down to a point where I'm just like, I'm absolutely not doing this anymore. And also achievement, I just hope I have made a lasting impact on the younger girls on the team and that they can look up to me. And hopefully in the future, they want to be like have some of my traits too. So
what about outside of swimming? As your, you know, senior year, you're looking back quite a bit. What are some of your kind of accomplishments, whether in school or in other activities that you're proud of and thinking about a lot these days?
I'm really proud of like my work ethic, especially in school. Like I go home and I have a routine every night and I do homework for like 2.5 hours and it sucks. But also like you feel good when you have the grades you do. So school has been a big accomplishment for me.
And Danielle, is there anything, I don't think Abby's the bragging type. So is there anything she didn't say that she should have?
No, I think she's got it. Yeah. I'm glad that you're proud of how you're working hard in school and in the water. And seeing that, putting all that hard work and the time, and like it really can suck sometimes a lot, like it's worth it. And she's able to see that and know that it's going to be paying off in the end.
That was our first North Star student, Bemidji senior Abby Damon, and her swim coach, Danielle Bartz. Visit kaxe.org for photos and more on Damon, including the full interview. There, you can also nominate someone you know for North Star student. We want to highlight students that might not always be in the spotlight, but deserve to be recognized. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at kaxe.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is made possible by Woodland Bank, providing customers with personal and business banking solutions, as well as offering Kasasa checking accounts. You can learn more online at woodland.bank.
We'll have the latest edition of the Up North Report today at 5:30 on All Things Considered here on People Powered KAXE. Good morning. It is 8:35. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
We receive support from the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
And support for KAXE comes from the Third Coast Chamber Collective, presenting chamber music up north, featuring an internationally renowned accordion and violin ensemble from Poland at Co-House on November 20th at 7 p.m. Tickets available at thirdcoastchambercollective.com.
Tell us about your home economics and shop class projects. You can text us at 218-326-1234 with those stories.
Yeah, that's our question of the week. Want to hear all about them. Weather for today, a mix of clouds and sun, highs near 33, winds from the west 5 to 10. Chance of flurries tonight with lows in the 20s, and for tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, highs in the low to mid 40s, blustery northwest winds, and looking ahead to Wednesday, sunny with highs in the low 40s. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to learn more about United Way of 1000 Lakes on The Bright Spot. Right now, it's new music from Natalie Bergman.
Baby, you can call me. I'll be there for you.
That is new music from Natalie Bergman. That song's called I'll Be Your Number One from her album My Home Is Not in This World. It is coming up on 8:40. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on KAXE. Now it's time for a bright spot, a chance to highlight the good in our communities. And United Way of 1,000 Lakes is one of a few United Way chapters in northern Minnesota. And they seek to improve lives by mobilizing the caring power of community. Joining us now are Molly Hepica and Kim Brink-Smith from United Way of 1,000 Lakes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start off with, you send an email every month, Molly, about volunteer opportunities in our community. Tell us about how you organize these opportunities for other organizations.
So we have a volunteer portal where people can go and look for opportunities, and organizations, nonprofits in the area can post their volunteer needs on that site. And once a month, I gather 5 or 6 opportunities and highlight them in a newspaper article.
Great. Yeah, I see coming up, you're looking for, or Kootaska Community Action is having a Soup in the Streets program on November 19th. At Old Central School, they're looking for volunteers for that, is one thing.
Yes, so that's an annual event that they do to raise awareness for homelessness. And they have advocates on the street and they serve soup. And it's just kind of people gather together for a few hours and enjoy the event.
Yeah. Also going on right now, I think we've got just over another week, maybe 10 days or so, Dining United.
Yes. Each fall season, we kick off a Dining United, and this year we have 20 different restaurants across the county participating. Each restaurant gets to select kind of a promotion that they want to promote and invite their guests to come in and enjoy a meal, and part of that meal will be donated back to United Way.
Great.
Looking at the website myself, and I'm seeing all kinds of opportunities here to volunteer. Of course, the website volunteer.uwlakes.org. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that we're featuring on the site this month is some community resilience opportunities to support people who may be struggling with the SNAP disruption. And one of those is United Way is kicking off our annual Home for Good Drive, where we collect home and personal essential items for people right here in Itasca County.
Hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of people, when you think of these benefits, you think, oh, people need to eat, which they do, but there are also so many other household items that people just kind of need to make a life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Anything from shampoo and conditioner, toothpaste, and all the sorts of things that many people take for granted. And with the rising cost of everything, it's hard to keep those things stocked. And it's just a welcome relief sometimes when people need a little extra support.
Yeah. So where can people donate for that?
So I believe we have 14 different Dropbox locations throughout the county. There's information on our website, which is uwlakes.org, and it's the Home for Good section. It'll tell you things to shop for, and you can find where you can drop off any donations. And there's just a bunch more resources right there on the website that tells you more about the program.
Okay.
There's also a little feature on there. If you really want to get more involved, you can pack based on a shopping list. So you pack for an individual. And then there's some optional items, so you can kind of customize it, kind of like we do with our Stuff the Bus, where we really customize it to the individual student. So if people want to get involved or you want to do a project with your family, it's a perfect time to kind of, it's that giving season, so it's a time to give back and encourage maybe generations to give back at the same time.
Okay. One thing I know that you guys have been working on is ALICE Families, which is a new acronym to me. But can you explain what ALICE Families are?
Yes, we've been doing a lot of different speaking engagements in the community just to really lift up ALICE. It stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. And there are 40% of our population here in Itasca County that are considered ALICE, which means they're living paycheck to paycheck. ALICE uses a method to determine how much someone needs to just pay for the basics. That covers health care, transportation. A single adult needs to make $14 an hour just to be able to pay the bills on time and not get behind. For a adult and a child, it's more like $24 an hour. So it's just a way to bring awareness to those in our community that might be struggling. And 40% is a pretty...
That's significant.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by that. Yeah, that is a large percentage, yeah. People who have these needs, where would they go on the website, or where would they turn to, or who would they call for?
On United Way, we do have the report available, and it's a dynamic website, so you can go on and dig in. So if you live in Deer River, you can dig in and see really what does my community look like? What does my neighborhood look like? What are some of the challenges they may be experiencing in different communities? For example, housing costs different. So this tool allows you to kind of go in and see, and maybe if you're a grassroots group trying to make change in your community, it's a great way to kind of learn more about and be able to design solutions to help your community. But we also are, all the work that we're doing is really looking through the ALICE lens. So all the grants that we grant out, all the programs that we run are really considering ALICE. So a lot of our programs, a qualifier is ALICE income levels. Right now, we also are piloting a Wheels to Work. So we have a partnership with Donlinger, and we're piloting a new program that is helping these working families keep their transportation in good condition and keep employed.
Excellent. Anything else that we should be highlighting, especially as we do get into that year end of the, you know, giving, and with you know, holidays have their own needs, and what else can we cover here?
One of the things that we highlighted this month is just a list of food resources for anybody who might be experiencing the difficulties from the SNAP pause. Under the Get Help section on our website, there's a bunch of resources where people can, I tried to gather everything from the county in one location. Or they can always give our office a call and see if we can help out and ask any other questions.
211 is also a really great resource that we collaborate with other partners in order to create that list and keep it maintained.
Great. We're talking with Kim Brink-Smith and Molly Hepica from United Way of 1000 Lakes. And lots going on. Again, Dining United going until November 20th.
Yes, give to the max day. So we always end it, a culmination of it. And we just want to thank all of our Dining United partners, all 20 of you, you know who you are. and encourage everybody to get out and dine. Every time you do, part of that donation comes back to United Way and supports the programs in our community and the grants that go out to 12 different organizations.
Excellent. And as if people do want to get involved in volunteering, they can find all kinds of opportunities at volunteer.uwlakes.org.
Great. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so
much. Thank you.
That is, again, Molly Hepica and Kim Brink-Smith from United Way of 1000 Lakes. Find more, volunteer.uwlakes.org. And The Bright Spot is made possible with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
think of mine. I've been thinking about it all damn night. If you let it, it can feel just right. Come on, baby, we can feel alright before I die. This time for real. I don't want nothing for it. I'll be the one you wanted. This time for real. I don't want nothing for it. I'll be the one you wanted. This time for real. I don't want nothing for it. I'll be the one you wanted. This time for real. I don't want nothing for it. I'll be the one you wanted.
That is new music from Chet Faker, This Time for Real, here on the Monday Morning Show on KAXE, KBXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy. It's 8:52.
Support comes from Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji, gathering at 10 a.m. on Sundays now through May at the Headwaters Peace Center. HUF is an inclusive space to seek truth, practice love, and celebrate life. Learn more at headwatersuu.org.
Coming up, we're going to hear a story from National Public Radio about a new documentary called Juan Gabriel, I Must, I Can, I Will.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. Mexican singer-songwriter Juan Gabriel sold millions of records, wrote dozens of hit songs, and toured for decades to sold-out crowds. And for about 45 years until his death in 2016, he chronicled almost all of it using handheld video cameras and tape recorders. Those decades of footage are the foundation of a new documentary series on Netflix called Juan Gabriel, I Must, I Can, I Will, which revives the private and public life of the musical legend. I spoke with Maria Jose Cuevas, the director of the series, and this is how she describes Juan Gabriel.
He is a truly unique figure, not only for his talent, his music, and his compositions. We owe him not just for his music, but also for being a person who broke many stereotypes and prejudices. And my most cherished memory is attending his concert at the Palace of Fine Arts in 1990.
Wow.
It's iconic because it was the first time a popular singer performed on a stage traditionally reserved for ballet, opera, and classical music. Yet, he managed to get the entire audience at a venue where he wasn't initially accepted to get up and dance.
Tell us what Juan Gabriel means and meant to Mexico and Mexicans.
Yo no conozco a nadie que no quiera a Juan Gabriel. Entonces Juan Gabriel siento que es un símbolo.
I don't know anyone who doesn't love Juan Gabriel. I feel he's a musical icon, almost a national symbol. And that's despite the context in which he emerged. Mexico in the 1970s and 1980s, a deeply conservative, macho, and homophobic country. Then suddenly, this figure appears, someone who manages to win over every social class, every kind of audience, even the most macho man. He's both a great provocateur and a great conqueror.
His sexuality, Maria, was a big source of conversation and controversy throughout his career. There's a clip from Juan Gabriel from an interview about the controversy around him.
Pero desgraciadamente, aparte de ser un buen vendedor de discos, soy un magnífico vendedor de periódicos.
So he says, as good as he is at selling records, he is even better at selling newspapers. How did he handle this constant speculation about his love life? And did he actually really care?
Yo creo que justo era un momento, ¿no? En el mundo entero.
I think it was a time when artists all around the world simply weren't coming out of the closet. Freddie Mercury in England, Elton John. I mean, back then, if artists, singers, or celebrities came out in the 70s and 80s, it would very quickly have ended their careers. In a 2002 interview, Juan Gabriel was asked if he was gay, and he responded with this iconic phrase.
Dicen que lo que se ve no se pregunta, mijo.
What is seen doesn't need to be asked.
Y yo creo que él siempre se manejó así en su vida.
I think he always lived that way. He was essentially saying, this is who I am. Don't ask me. You can see it. And that's a form of provocation, a kind of quiet revolution about being yourself and always playing with that ambiguity.
So there was Juan Gabriel, the artist. That's his stage name. His real name was Alberto Aguilera Valadez. What would you say, Maria, is the biggest difference between Juan Gabriel and Alberto Aguilera Valadez?
Alberto es el compositor.
Alberto is the composer. He is the one who writes down all his experiences, who pours out his loneliness, who is the child forced to face solitude, and the man who seeks to fill all these voids by becoming a father. And I feel that Juan Gabriel is the performer who sings these songs of loneliness. But he is the one who becomes free. He creates a completely liberated persona to then fill all those voids for the audience. That is the difference.
One of the things, Maria, that I think this docuseries did very well is really illustrate the difference between the personal versus the public image. Mm-hmm. And it helped that we heard Juan Gabriel's voice throughout this whole thing. When did you decide that this documentary series would be that, would be told in that way?
Cuando tuvimos acceso a este tesoro, que es la bodega donde él mantenía todos sus cassettes.
When we gained access to this treasure trove, the storage room where he kept all his cassettes, we discovered that many of them had mold after having been stored there for so many years. The truly remarkable thing about this man is that, from a young age, Alberto Aguilera bought a Super 8 camera and developed a passion for documenting his entire life. Thanks to that vision, for 45 years, he filmed and stored everything that was Alberto and everything that was Juan Gabriel. For me, the experience was deeply immersive, constantly delving into this dual universe.
I want to know what your favorite Juan Gabriel song is. Mine is Querida.
Querida, cada momento de mi vida, yo pienso en ti más cada día.
When I was a little kid, my grandfather was a very serious, quiet, and strict, stern man. Mm-hmm. But there was one time where I saw him play this song, and he closed his eyes and was mouthing the lyrics to that song. I'd never seen that kind of emotion out of him. And it really made me think, man, that song has that much power over him. So for you, what is your number one Juan Gabriel song?
Híjoles, me gustan miles, pero
there are several that I like, but the one that comes to mind right now is Debo Hacerlo. It's a song that was also very present in the series. In fact, we took the title of the series, I Must, I Can, and I Will, from it.
Ah, yeah. Maria Jose Cuevas directed the docuseries Juan Gabriel, I Must, I Can, I Will. It is streaming right now on Netflix. Maria, muchísimas gracias por hacer esta entrevista conmigo.
Ay, muchísimas gracias. Thank you so, so much.
Debo hacerlo todo.
It's the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr with Steve Noy.
Good morning. This is 91.7 KAXE in Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE in Bagley and Bemidji, 89.9 in Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. Join us